that can set NFL records pretty much without even trying. Actually, I don't want to say that. He was probably trying very hard on Sunday to make sure that that didn't happen. But here we are. My name is Scott.
I'm Paul.
I'm Frank.
The Bills lose 54-24 on Sunday to the Chargers in a what was probably described by at least this podcast and by other sites as a, essentially a must-win game if the Bills wanted to remain at least in the official playoff picture. The Bills now at 5-5, having squandered a 5-2 record and looking straight down the barrel of the Chiefs and Patriots. With not just a somewhat banged up team, not just a team that can't stop the run or the pass, but also a team that does not have any quarterbacks, or at least doesn't think it has any quarterbacks. So we are here to talk like a Fitzpatrick game a couple years ago when he was with the Jets and he threw like three interceptions in the second half that I'm kind of remembering, where you had a nice long apology that you started off with. Do you have anything you want to get off your chest?
Me or Frank? Sorry.
Frank.
No, I didn't want to get into this that quickly. Obviously, it's an inexcusably terrible performance. And I guess I would like to separate that, first of all, from how I feel about Nathan Peterman. I'm sure he's a nice guy, and I am sure that he didn't imagine that his first start would go this way, and I would not want to read too much into it, but I think you can read a lot into how underprepared he was. So I just felt bad for him. It's weird. My mom, who I've mentioned before, doesn't watch a lot of sports. At the end was like, she basically was blaming the coach and felt bad for Nathan Peterman. And I sort of agree with her. I think that like, that's probably a pretty fair assessment. Obviously it didn't go the way he wanted it to. I heard Sean McDermott today, I hadn't done that in weeks. Sean McDermott today talking about.
He doesn't deserve to have his name said correctly.
Right. Talking a lot about, wanting to watch the tape and all that stuff. And there was the understandable, like, guffaws that he would, you know, need to watch the tape somehow. But also, I think that's what I want the coach to do, because I think universally people believe, like, the first interception wasn't really on Peterman. The next two were pretty awful. He probably could have had six interceptions. So you want to maybe, if you can, determine how much of this was literally Peterman's a terrible quarterback and how much of this was a bad team and bad start that absolutely snowballed on him. I would like to save the rest of my comments because I think we're going to go deep on the whole decision. I mean, I imagine we're going to see this at least one or two rounds.
We will continue, yes.
But largely that was easily the story of the game, and the fact that they couldn't really stop anyone. It's a vicious cycle. It's hard to determine how much of this was, again, an offense that couldn't stay on the field and how much of this was a Chargers team or last week a Saints team that was ready to score. But, I mean, piss poor effort all around. It's just, I mean, there's nothing good really happened.
It was pretty quickly a unanimous kind of like, oh, well, we feel bad for Peterman because McDermott clearly made a poor choice in putting him in there. And I would say if you're Peterman, that has to feel worse because there's almost never any pity that's given to an NFL player who's getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to play a game for a living. And very rarely do you kind of get to that level, you know, in your first NFL start. And just universal pity is not really a good look for him. So Paul, what are your thoughts on the initial thoughts on the debacle?
Yeah, it was,
catastrophe in Chargerville.
Right. Yes. When I posted on Twitter to ask for questions, I said, the Hindenburg, the Titanic, the Black Death, help us place Nathan Peterman's first start in its proper context amidst these comparable events. So that is, I mean, God, what can you even say about, well, you can say a lot about this game. That's why we have a podcast, but what's especially just drives me mad about it is, and again, we'll go into the decision more as Frank said, what a total team fail, a total team loss. I mean, they lost by legitimately 20 plus points and 30 plus points, actually, pretty much the last 3 weeks. Yes, I know they scored two late touchdowns against the Jets to make that score look semi-respectable, but they really lost that game by 27 points. So total fail. The defense had shown incompetency both in the pass and the run. That continued. The rushing numbers looked better because at least there were some plays where they were able to stop the Chargers from running the football. That is the, you know, I've searched really hard for that silver lining. You know, Colton Schmidt had a bad day punting. At least Hauschka got his long field goal in there. And the offense, I mean, that first half, that was the worst, you know, performance by a quarterback in 40 years in the NFL since 1977 in terms of the other one who threw more, interceptions at that point, I believe had played the whole game. So I would not have been surprised if Peterman would have thrown 8 interceptions that game. So it was just so, so frustrating to watch because you feel like, you know, there had to be some semblance of logic in the decision to start him at quarterback. They must see things we don't. And he either melted down totally under the lights or McDermott was willing to put him out there just as an affront to Tyrod or, as, you know, Reza noted on Twitter, I almost subscribe to this conspiracy theory because it's the only logical thing I can think of. Is, you know, he noted that, hey, maybe this is part of a grand plan to, punish Tyrod and make him, come out throwing downfield more, which he did when he came in the game. Obviously, that is not reality, but man, it makes you wonder, like, how the heck this could have happened and why, you know, I think this was a much closer game if they didn't make the decision they did, but the Bills, don't mistake me. The Bills would have lost this game regardless. They were just dominated. On all sides of the ball.
That's an interesting question. So I guess I will pick it up there. So, I mean, obviously, you know, you can never know exactly, you know, a hypothetical of right. What happens and what doesn't. I will say that I was pretty pleased that on a number of occasions, the Bills actually did manage to kind of slow San Diego down once they got to the red zone. The San Diego ended up attempting 5 field goals in the game, which is usually an indicator that you got close to the end zone, but you didn't actually end up getting in. Now, obviously, again, there's a lot of kind of ways that would change and different, you know, reasons for that happening, but I don't think it's completely irrelevant. And, you know, I don't want to say Tyrod would definitely, I mean, obviously, I don't want to count the escape pressure and B, you know, move, you know, the team on occasion. Obviously he had 2 bad games the last couple of weeks, but do we think that based off this game was going, there was a chance for the Bills to win, or was this just kind of dead man walking regardless? So Paul, you're kind of the opinion that this was like game over regardless.
Yeah. I think it was dead man walking. You, when I look at the second half, when Tyrod came in, I think the Bills were down 37-7 at that point. So I think from there on the scoring was 17-17, and that was without the Chargers actually really trying to do anything of note. So it lends credence to, you know, this team on defense can't really stop, you know, anyone right now. I think the offense would have certainly played better overall with Tyrod into the whole game. They did lose Benjamin early in the game. Let's not underestimate how that circumstance played into things for the offense. But the team has looked really flat and really unprepared for what I would say 3 consecutive weeks. So, you know, with that in mind, I really don't think that they were going to win this game no matter what. But, you know, if Frank wants to persuade me otherwise, yeah, I'm not passionate on this.
No, I agree. I don't have any real reason to believe that they would have won. I guess your argument would be that it would have been closer and then anything can happen, and the Chargers have lost close games.
It's McCoy averaging 10 yards of carry, that kind of thing.
Right.
Not doing anything for you.
The thing is, like, I mean, I was sort of saying this at the beginning of the game. Peterman threw the ball on the first drive kind of well, and he threw it right to Benjamin, and I felt like some of the early running success was also because they weren't able to stack the box quite the same way, or they hadn't been, at least on a couple of those plays. And so the, you know, I think that when you look at it, Does Sean McDermott want to make the same decision again? I think it's hard to say you would, but I think that you could argue, like, okay, if we knew that was going to be the case, we would have, you know, you designed the offensive slightly differently for Peterman, or something, or if Kelvin Benjamin doesn't go down, like, does that change it enough that he can, like, but that's like a nice safety net for him in the beginning of the game, and he doesn't panic as much. There's a lot of variables. And I don't know. I liked the plan that I saw on the first drive up and until the interception. And then obviously it got away from them, but I kind of liked how it looked. And I don't know that he was already doing things that Tyrod Taylor kind of wasn't doing. And so
throwing interceptions or
right. Throwing interceptions being one of them, but also throwing downfield to Kelvin Benjamin.
Okay, well, Tyrod had him for 1 week.
Right. Well,
how much in sync is he supposed to be after him with 1 week?
Well, I don't know. Nathan Peterman had him for all of 4 days, and apparently he found him just fine. So
Tyrod threw to him three times last week. He had three catches last week, correct? Yeah,
that none of those count.
Okay, understood. All right. So just, okay, anyway. Frank, let's skip to it. Do you start Peterman next week? We're going to come back to the Chiefs game later, but let's just start it right now.
No, I don't, and it's not because I have great faith in Tyrod Taylor to win this game. I think you could start Peterman if you want to just phone in the season now. But weirdly, even though you've lost to the Chargers and this was your best chance, the Chiefs have lost 4 of 5,
yep.
And I think you've just got to put yourself in the best position to win. And I think that there's no way McDermott can go into that room and look at all those players and say, hey, we're going to start Nathan Peterman again because he gives us the best chance to win without literally just losing all credibility. So he's going to start Taylor, and I think that you should start Taylor because if you beat the Chiefs, you're strangely right back to where you were. You just need to beat the Colts and the Dolphins twice.
It would be poetic justice for them to go, like, you know, pull together 9-7 the rest of the year and miss the playoffs by
one game. Yeah.
I think we're having a Scott audio issue, by the way. Have you noticed that, Frank?
I have noticed Scott pops in and out a little.
Yes, that was the issue I was knowing, too. So that's why it's funny, Scott. I thought when you introduced the podcast, you were letting it be silent. And I'm like, oh, now he's talking.
All right. Well, why don't I go and come back? But, Paul, why don't you talk about whether you think Peterman should start on Sunday?
All right. So Scott will drop off, and I will say, hell no, no, no. Bad. Bad McDermott, bad. That's my opinion on that. I mean, how would you even – and he was subtly hinting at it today. At least Joe Biscaglia thought so, and John Warrow from the Associated Press thought so as well. But how would you justify that in a locker room and say, okay, we threw this guy out there in front of 25,000 fans and was a pretty tame atmosphere against a team that is fairly – you know, that's low down on the totem in the AFC – and he went in there and just stunk it up terribly and put the team in a position that no matter what they did in the second half, it wasn't going to be good enough and they were going to lose the game. So I think if he goes into that locker room and he says, yeah, we're going to go with Peterman again next week. If you are, you know, Kyle Williams or LeSean McCoy or Jerry Hughes or other guys that, or Eric Wood,
right.
You know, guys that have been here for a while, how are they going to feel? It's essentially saying like, okay, you know, you're going to put your health at risk these next 6 weeks, and you know it's for nothing because clearly we've given up on this season going anywhere at all right now. So I think on that logic alone, based on the fact that Tyrod is – first of all, the only other argument I can make is that Peterman gives you a better chance to win than Tyrod. If you're able to make that argument and you are sane, I am all for hearing it. I don't think that argument can be made. The other argument is, well, we're just going to give up on Tyrod, so we're going to see what Peterman has. We don't want him to go out that way. Then you're telling all the guys in the locker room who you were telling to believe in the process that, yeah, the process doesn't involve winning this season at all. So that's my view for why you need to start Tyrod.
I think you're kind of stuck. I think you're right. I think that the problem is that he took such a big hit on his credibility, and this is as good a time as any to bring it up now, mm-hmm. that, you know, I want to separate the decision McDermott made last week from the result. And I know he sort of said that, like, you know, I'm not mad. I wouldn't change the decision even though I'm disappointed in the result. Or he said, I'm not disappointed in the decision. Like, if last week he sincerely thought Peterman was the better quarterback or what he sincerely believed Peterman gave them the better chance to win, well, then I want the coach to make that decision, right? Because it's just as – even though it's outwardly more of a risk to show to the world You know, you're switching quarterbacks. It really is just as much a risk to leave Tyrod in if you don't believe he's the better quarterback, because now you're just sort of taking a risk that's a little less visible, but you know, you're still playing with the best possibility of the team. So I want a coach who, if he believes something, is going to act on it. And I think that's a good quality. And the obvious problem is, the result was so far afield that it makes me question a whole other important quality in a coach, which is the ability to read talent. and arguably that's a much bigger issue if McDermott can't properly assess who is the better player. And whatever the breakdown in that decision-making was, like, I'm happy that they made the decision, I guess, because I guess he believed it. But now you have to look at, now you have to go back to your process and say, okay, how did we arrive at this conclusion and why were we so wrong? Was it because I listened to Rick Dennison too much? Was it because it was not done immediately? Was it because it was switched, because switches like this never work? Was it because we were all secretly, you know, there's a part of us that we're okay with just moving on from Tyrod, you know.
Secret racist?
Right. Well, some people have written that column too.
Yes. That's crazy to me. By the way, are we all on board that this is not, that is not the case in this issue?
I will say that I don't believe it to be the issue. Obviously, I can't know a man's heart, right? I can't know when people are believing, but there's nothing about McDermott that would, or Bean or anybody else who'd be involved in this decision that would be, especially on a team that with I guess I don't want to go down this road too far, but like there are clearly like star black players on this team. And so like there doesn't seem to be some sort of grudge against that. There's nothing other than the fact that we switched one quarterback for another that's even remotely.
It's a very heavy charge to lay on someone.
Right. Yeah. Remember when the Sean laid that on Chip Kelly in the fervor that caused. So,
but that's the thing is that obviously we're mostly talking about an unconscious bias. That's the problem. Is that if it's there, it's not black people aren't as good at quarterback. It's there's something about Nate Peterman that just makes me think he's a little bit better than Tyrod.
Right.
And it's really hard to define what that is unless you really start to break down your own mental processes and get into the brain, you know, get into how your process mentally works, which is almost impossible for any sane person to do without years of psychotherapy and kind of really like a level of self-acuity that most people don't possess.
That said, if we have to send McDermott for years of psychotherapy to figure that out, then I'm cool with it.
Which
is on a long-term contract. Let's get this right.
Right. The only caveat I'd say is twofold. First of all, at least it was LeSean McCoy directly saying that about Chip Kelly, and he would have, you know, some direct evidence to say something like that, opposed to people who are entirely on the outside looking in, you know, supposing that. And then second of all, doubling down on that part where it's just like, you know, it is such an internal thing that like, and it is a heavy charge. We just got to be, I feel like we ought to be careful.
To be fair, that Tyrod did kind of intimate that. I mean, about his experience in general. Now, obviously we don't know what his relationship with this McDermott was, but he didn't say this any other years too.
Right. He had said that it was in an article in October where he had talked about African-American quarterbacks needing to prove a little bit more. And so, which is also why I don't want to dismiss it out of hand. I just feel like.
No, I agree. I think it's too much, but I think it gets back to your bigger point with Frank, which is 100% correct, which is we have no idea how Sean McDermott evaluates quarterbacks, and clearly he was doing it terrible.
It's fine not to jump in, Scott, but this goes right to the last discussion I had on Twitter before we came on. It goes right to what Frank was saying. I had said yesterday during the game, and there were some good counters to this. I said, you have to lose at least some respect for McDermott here, right? There is nothing to indicate this is a remotely informed decision. He's seen Peterman practice every week. You have to know when a guy is this not ready for prime time. Tom, longtime listener Tom, shot back, and I thought this was a good counter. Having slept on it, no, Peterman probably looked completely on it in practice for several weeks. Can't account for what happens when the lights are on and the game's at full speed for the first time. The bad decision was the choice of game. Chargers pass rush too scary. Bill's chick countered with, or McD has zero QB evaluation skills and is terrible. That's the other logical option.
Right.
And I think both of those are logical options. There's merit to both those arguments.
Some of this too, and I don't mean to sidetrack you here, Scott, I know, but I just feel like we're here on the discussion is like, you got to remember McDermott for all intents and purposes was in charge of this draft, right? So like, he passed on Mahomes to get Peterman later. And you might get, now what you might have is at the end of this year, there are no quarterbacks, and Bean is happily capable of sort of assessing the draft and deciding who he wants. And you would hope that your general manager is a much better Italian evaluator. Obviously a coach has to be a talent evaluator on some level. He needs to be able to decide of my two quarterbacks, who's the better. And he got an F this week for sure. But you know, going forward, you know, is it possible that, like, if they lose this game to the Chiefs and then the Patriots, right? Do we care if we put Nathan Peterman back in? Like,
no.
I don't, right? Like, at some point it becomes garbage time. And
I mean, it honestly, it kind of depends, because I could almost see the Bills still being in it at that point with kind of three locks, presumably, against the Colts and Dolphins twice.
Right. It all depends, you know, how are the Ravens going to do, the Titans going to do, and then the teams below them, how are
but
they?
But yes, if we're completely out of it, then yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm trying to get at, right? Like, pick your number. Yeah. Like, what's the number where we can start talent evaluating and saying, okay, you know, I mean, if they did that now and they told him, like, hey, why don't you just start prepping for the Colts game, you know, like, and he had a month to do it, could he do a better job? I don't know.
I would hope so. For a second, Frank, I thought when you were talking about talent evaluation, I thought you were talking about Italian evaluation. And hey, I was kind of like, what is Silvio Berlusconi and Matteo Renzi? Like, how does being able to compare Italian prime ministers have anything to do with this?
That Nathan Peterman is a one spice of meatball.
All right, we are going
Frank,
to...
Frank, by the way, is Italian, so that's okay that he just did that.
He could do that, exactly.
There's no racist in the Bills front office, but I am, in fact, racist against my own people.
Exactly. I won't even get you started on Ukrainians, but you know, I am Ukrainian. That's the joke there. All right, anyway, go ahead. Sorry, Scott.
They are a terrible people, and I am racist.
Ukrainians strong.
No, so we're going to move on to three stars because we there are so many things to talk about, but we need to sprinkle in some of our routine segments, because otherwise, why would you come here?
And the sponsors pay for it, so.
Exactly. So this is, three stars brought to you by, Yancey's Fancy's Cheese. And, your honorable mention goes to LeSean McCoy, which, you know, 13 carries for 114 yards and a touchdown, in addition to another catch, for another touchdown. It's really a shame to waste a good, again, we've already wasted plenty of good LeSean McCoy performances. We wasted another on Sunday, so let's not stop now. Also, I will give the other role, honorable mention to, I don't think I could have done this. He could have gone out there and run the ball one time, lost 4 yards and fumbled, and I'm pretty sure he still would have gotten at least an honorable mention, was Melvin Gordon, just because he went to Wisconsin and I love him. So, 20 carries, 80 yards and a touchdown, that definitely gets him, the honorable mention. He does not get any higher though, because there were so many Chargers who played fantastic. So we'll start third star with, Casey Hayward, 2 picks, for 9 yards. He was the guy who I think had, I think his, like, opposing passer rating against is like 0 for this game, technically, cause he gave up like 1 reception, but he broke up 2 passes and had 2 interceptions. So that's a pretty decent day at the office. Your, second star is going to be, Keenan Allen, who again, it's not that hard to figure out the Bills defensive. There was like I remember reading a couple weeks ago that there was like people who were like, oh yeah, they were coming up to Leslie Frazier and being like, you're doing a really great job with the Bills defense. And it's kind of like, they kind of figured it out. That is pretty much over with. He is pretty much getting torched on a regular basis. And it's pretty easy for Keenan Allen to find those little holes in the zone behind our very slow linebackers and in front of our fairly decent safeties and corners. When they're healthy.
Yes.
But he had 12 catches for 159 yards and 2 touchdowns, which is obscene. And then your first star goes to, longtime, Wisconsin tormentor, Joey Bosa, who only showed up technically for one sack, on the day, but at the same time, was pretty much unblockable by Jordan Mills. Jordan Mills makes a lot of guys unblockable, but Joey Bosa is actually a good player too. So that's kind of a lethal combination. As far as this game was concerned, he was the one who ended up, I believe, forcing the fumble that Melvin Ingram ended up running back for the touchdown late when Tyrod was in. So, yeah, those are your three stars. And just in case you didn't know, yes, your 106th star was Nathan Peterman. 6 of 14, 66 yards, 5 interceptions, no sacks.
Tough to do. Very tough to do.
Tough to do. Well, I mean, yeah, that's
singular
true.
Singular in the last 40 years.
It's who gets like 20 losses, because it's like you have to be good enough to have them keep sending you out there. Like, yeah. If it was you or me or Frank, like, we just would have gotten sacked three times, and then they would have pulled us after about a quarter. Also, we would have been dead.
Yeah, but we would have been injured so immediately, there's no way we would have done it.
Couldn't have thrown the ball five times.
Right. Scott's argument here is why I call the late, great Anthony Young. Anthony Young argument, pitched for the Mets in the late 80s, early 90s, set the all-time record for most consecutive decisions with the loss. But obviously good enough that they kept throwing him back in. They're like, well, he's going to win eventually. And he did. It just took a long, long time.
So we will.
Do you remember Anthony Young, or was that? Am I the only one as a National League East fan that remembers Anthony Young?
I don't think I remember Anthony Young.
Everything though, Scott, so appalling. So
that's true. So we will move on to Facebook and Twitter before we get to our fun games that we have planned for, later in the show, as well as this day in Bills history and Bills Chiefs. We will start with Facebook because I have it open right in front of me, and Paul can get up Twitter if he doesn't have it already.
I've got it ready to go.
Basically not a lot of, stuff on Facebook this week. I feel like everyone appreciated my changing of the cover photo.
Yeah. My wife gave you a shout out.
Yeah, that was it. I was kind of like logging in on Sunday night to put in the request for comments, and I just kind of like looking at the Bills Stadium, and I was like, this is not accurate. This like, there are people here who are excited. Like, it seems like everything's fine. So we needed to change that. So people clearly enjoyed that. And I like Brian's SS process. I think we need to keep that going. we're going to turn Sean McDermott into Baghdad Bob by the end of this. 5-11. He's going to be like, we're still on the edge of the playoffs. Nathan Peterman is fine. It's just a matter of time before things turn around. And then speaking of, turning it around, Ryan kind of was clearly disappointed with, McDermott's every team goes through this comment. Clearly hit a bit of a nerve, and he kind of, Sean may have forgot exactly what fan base he was dealing with here.
Right. And not every team goes through this. So like, really? Cause the Bills have never given up this many points in three straight games. So no, every team has not gone through this. The Bills have not quite gone through this before.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like a 3-game losing streak. Sure. But a 3-game losing streak, we're 5-2 and in the catbird seat for a playoff spot. Not quite the same thing, especially for a team that's 17 years without the playoffs, which Ryan points out. And then putting in the rookie, and then also again, McDermott, a defensive coach, and yet his defense cannot be found on the field. So yes, that was a good comment from Ryan as well. Paul, was there anything you want to flag on Twitter?
A few things on Twitter, and there was a ton of interaction yesterday. I think it's just when it's when you're so watching such misery, you have no choice but to be talkative about it. So Orlando asked, you know, is this McDougal being stubborn and not wanting to eat crow?
Did he call him McDougal?
What's that?
Did he call him
McDougal? Oh, well, we're going to call him McDougal then. Yes. He did call him McDougal. So that is on Orlando, but I'm going to call him McDougal anyway. But I think, you know, he didn't say, we noticed in the post-game press conference and in the press conference today that he didn't really say anything about Peterman to indicate that he struggled or anything like that. So, part of it is wondering if McDermott just doesn't want to take responsibility for it being a bad decision, because he said he doesn't regret the decision, which, by the way, there would be no shame in, but that he regrets the result, which Frank noted earlier. So there should probably be some regret for that decision. So we'll see. Orlando also noted that he has...
I wonder how much of that is just him also, like, protecting Nathan Peterman a bit and not going out there and slamming him, you know? Like...
Yeah. You don't want to denigrate your quarterback too much if he's ever going to play. Like, even if they go with Tyron, Tyron gets hurt, you don't want to throw him out and be like, oh, yeah, I told the public you suck.
You can still say, like, you know, me and Nathan have talked. We both realize that he's got, you know, he's got a bright and he's going to have better games than the one he put out there on Sunday. And we know he's going to get a lot better. You know, that wasn't his best performance.
Right. He would benefit from more preparation. And, you know, I think he'll get past this and he'll go on to have a
working quarterback brain and an arm that can get the ball out faster.
Orlando also noted he started a pastime. He says he's not listening to the previous week's podcast after the next week's game because it's his favorite pastime. It says it's fun to see how much hope you guys have in the Bills, all while knowing they let you down more and more each week. So a good observation for Orlando. And Orlando would know because he was at the Atlanta game, remember. So he remembers what it was like way back when things were good.
Game, right.
Yep. Shapes Ensembler accused me of overgeneralizing about, he went in with harsher language, as Shapes is prone to do, and noting that I was, saying that this is something you risk really losing the locker room, with. But I stand by that. It's, when you make a decision like this, it's so bold and it goes so badly, you're going to struggle to keep that locker room. So, you know.
We're going to put the explicit tag on this. We're not there yet, Paul, but we're going to get there.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, it'll be happening. Tom noted that, he was on pace for about 60 interceptions for the season, and the Bills have given up on that record, so that's sad. Jesmond pointed out to us that the Nathan Peterman's first start was so bad, it made The Guardian, which is the UK's major paper. Like, Nathan Peterman's first start was one of the all-time great terrible NFL debuts. So this is mainstream news in the UK, how bad
for all those London fans who come to three games a year, they're drinking in the Peterman.
Ryan asked bonus podcast question. If Peterman is on an NFL roster Thursday, does Cap automatically win his collusion case?
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair question.
Zing.
Yep. So there's a lot of those. That was pretty much the crux of what was on Twitter in the last 24 hours. So thanks to everyone I mentioned. Thanks to Reza, Bill's Chick, Brian Evans. Thanks to all of our new followers this week. Hope you're listening to the podcast. And thank you for making the game mildly more tolerable. I say mildly more tolerable. You all helped a lot. Phil, too. Phil was very participative yesterday. You all made the game much more tolerable, but it was just a tough game to tolerate, period. But thanks for the discussion yesterday. And hopefully, win or lose next week, we're going to have a lot to talk about.
Okay. We are going to move on to the first of our two games. I've been taking off from podcast hosting for some amount of time. I don't know why. Probably because I always show up late and I'm never prepared. That may have something to do with it. Better edit.
You win the children battle 2-1-0. So
that's true. The kids are actually hosting most of this podcast. The first game is a classic. It's a classic. Leslie Frazier, Rick Dennison, Brandon Bean, fuck, marry, kill.
I knew it. I knew it was going there.
Frank, go.
So I get Brandon Bean, Leslie Frazier, and what was the other one?
Rick Dennison.
Okay.
We're not going to get into McDermott. With McDermott, we can do over.
I can't live with the other two.
Okay. Interesting.
So
Mary Bean.
Yeah. I've got mine all set, by the way.
You can either fuck in the copulate sense or fuck in the, like, fuck that guy sense. Like, either one.
No. It has to be copulate. Come on now.
Yes. Okay. All right.
None of this just, like, wordplay nonsense. Okay. All right. I will have fired and removed from this earthly plane in purely the spirit of this game and not in real life. Obviously, Mr. Leslie Frazier, and I'll give.
Okay, interesting. All right, so you're putting the defensive failures as much on the scheme as on the complete dearth of personnel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, there can be an argument made that it's not a complete dearth of personnel, that the secondary is decent and there's some talent in the front seven, though certainly not enough.
Okay, I'm not sure I would go that way.
I'm just saying there's an argument to be made.
That's interesting. So kill Leslie Frazier, fuck Dennison, and Mary Bean. Okay.
Like a good choice, by the way. Like, I'm not, like, thrilled with that.
That's why it's a fun game.
That's why it's a fun game, right, okay.
Yep.
Paul.
So it was it Bean or McDermott on this, by the way? I just want to make sure I have this right. So we have
Dennis and Frazier.
Okay, so Bean, Dennis, and Frazier. So mine are actually all opposite of what Frank's are, which was not planned. I wrote this out. So the copulation is going to have to go with Brandon Bean. He is a good planner. That has to count for something. He's willing to take hard work over talent. I found that someone who works at it is progressively going to make an experience pleasing despite the ups and downs of misery that are bound to occur during the process. So overall, Bean gets the copulative treatment. Kill, it's got to be Dennison. I just don't see his value on this earthly plane. I have yet to find out what that is. Again, this is purely for games. I'm not actually do not have the motivation to take him off this earth, but I don't see what value he has. And then Mary, I'm going to go with Leslie Frazier. He has a very kind of soft, soothing voice that can make you forget the things he are saying are total nonsense and incompetence, and that is really, has nothing to go on. So that's that's my what I feel is fairly sound reasoning for my preferences there.
I actually, me and Paul are 100% on the same page.
All right.
It was. Yeah, no, I started before you went, Frank, and I ended up at the same place. Fuck Bean, Mary Frazier, kill Dennison. Because, again, like, whatever this offense is, it's not – like, that's the thing. Like, they weren't that great when Tyrod was in there. Like, when we were winning five games, it wasn't like they were lighting teams on fire. Like, they were just taking advantage of turnovers. Like, it was never really that pretty.
Yeah, it was more of a Steven Hauschka offense that they're winning games
like,
on.
The fact that we had a guy who could set the NFL record for 50-yard kicks in a season, consecutive kicks, is the reason we were winning. All right. Okay. So that's game one. That was fun. All right. Second game is, we've built a time machine. The time machine can go not, 11 months back. All right. Now you can only get out one sentence to Sean McDermott. And again, we're assuming that there's no terrorist attacks. You know, all the terrorist attacks have been prevented. All the kids who got sick from some, you fixed all those problems. All the real problems have been fixed. Now you have to go back and attempt to, fix a Bills problem. You've gone back in time and you get your sit down and you're with the you can go back. Who knows? I'm just going to leave it open, but it's 11 months ago and I forget exactly when McDermott was hired, but let's say it was before McDermott was hired.
Okay.
Let's just say theoretically. You don't have to fire him. I'm not saying that's the definite choice. I'm not putting that out there. Just saying you could. But yes, you have one sentence to say to McDermott, and then at that point you are teleported back to the present and you're or to whomever. You don't have to say it to McDermott. You could say it to the Pegulas. You could say it to Brandon Bean. All right. So now that I've set this up, any questions?
No, so it's basically one sentence to someone who has authority over the Bills
exactly.
Back before all this nonsense happened.
Yes, this is your come with me if you want to live moment.
Yeah, Paul's right. Definitely got to go first on this because...
Okay.
Yeah, because right. Now I've got to think on my... Because there are a few that occurred to me, and I'm ruling them all out. Like, at first I thought, don't start Peterman or don't take Peterman would be up
that's,
there.
That,
but
that's
honestly, the Bills might still be 5-5 if that's the case. So I didn't want to utter that because I don't think it will be helpful. I kind of, there's a scene in the original Twin Peaks where, Agent Cooper agrees to go to the Miss Twin Peaks contest and is warned by a giant, no, no, no. So I'd almost want to warn the people about to be hired. No, no, no. You're just setting yourself up for, a miserable time. God, this is a good one. And hopefully
your sentence can't be hire Sean McVay. Cause I feel like that's not fair. Like, that's just cheating.
Right.
Like,
no, it can't.
That's an easy one.
I think it's so boring. I think I would go up to, I think I would find McDermott, who I've, as pissed as I am at him, I'm not really, livid. I'm not fire him now yet.
You're not going to spin the wheel. You're not going to go back and spin that wheel again.
Right, right. So I'm fine with McDermott being hired, and I would want to go to him because he's the one who has the most control over the game day action, and I would want to say to him, Find a linebacker. That is what I'm going to go with. Any linebacker. Just find a linebacker.
Interesting. And so this is presumably,
like
presumably
that's a big part of the rushing defense problem right now is linebackers who don't stay in their lanes because they got rid of Jarrell Worthy and put in Coleman. That didn't seem to help things. So I also would want to warn him if I had a second warrant. I just saw this news story today. On sale next year are going to be talking sex robots with warm genitals. So I would want to warn McDermott to see if he really wants to continue living in this world in 2018. But that's not Bills related, so that's a separate warning.
That would be a separate warning. So yeah. Your ideal time frame for this would be sometime like preseason or like first two, three weeks of the regular season? Because you'd want him today to say, because his first, like if you tell him in the summer, he's going to be like, I'm going to go get Ramon Humber.
Right, yeah, but yeah, what I would want him to do is, yeah, I would want it to be after, so he would know, like, okay, guys don't have our good enough. If I'm going to trade Sammy Watkins, even though EJ Gaines has been fine when he's been in there, he's been out and off injured, same with Jordan Matthews in the Ronald Darby trade, I would hope he could find a comparable Rams or Eagles linebacker that they would be willing to part with that would really help what we're seeing out there. That is one example.
Okay, all right. I am in more in love with this game than I think I've been with every game ever. And we've only like halfway into it. So
all
right. We have to bring this back.
I'll screw it up. Don't worry. I think I would go to a meeting where Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott are. And I would say,
I'm from the future.
And no, that's my whole sentence. And I.
Well, no, you can use one semicolon in your sentence.
Yeah.
I'm from the future. Don't. How do I want to phrase it? The phrasing I feel like is key.
Okay.
What I want to express.
Because you don't want unintended consequences. You don't want it to be like. You don't want it to be like. Don't trade Ronald Darby, and then Ronald Darby ends up staying in Buffalo. He ends up growing to the Pro Bowl. He ends up leading us into a dark kind of, you know, weird race war future for some reason. Like, you don't know. So you have to be very specific in your language.
Yeah, I had that caveat squared away. The next thing I would want to say, I would say the AFC is incredibly weak. Don't give up on 2017. And I think if you could express that opinion at the beginning of the year, may make different personnel choices across the board.
Like 9-7 will get you to the playoffs this year.
Right. And it might be a question of you could wake up the, because I think a lot of their problem has been this sort of, they've been trying to play it both ways for so long. And it really worked out okay at the beginning because they were getting a lot of turnovers and it looked a lot better than it probably was. Mm-hmm. But then they sort of like said, well, maybe we need to sort of bring in a little bit more talent. And they've been trying to serve two masters, right? They're trying to serve 2018 and beyond and 2017. And it's not that there's not intelligent ways you can do that, but I don't think anybody thought that 2017 was going to be in play the way it is this year. And so I think what I would, you know, want is, you know, to explain to that room how good of a chance even this, you know, decidedly mediocre, if not bad, Bills team has. And if you have that mindset at the beginning of the season, you know, maybe you don't rush to trade players for picks. Maybe,
that's a good point. When do you tell this to them?
Yeah, this is tough because I feel like the draft was a missed opportunity, but I also think that if you could get it into Bean's ear, that's the thing. Like, is Bean going to listen, right? Because Bean might say, well, it doesn't matter. It's still afraid to get
from the future, though. You're from the future, so you carry a lot of authority. You're wearing futuristic clothes. You know, you can, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
look, my shirt's look.
Yeah, because we should also make sure to note to him, like, hey, if you've sexually harassed someone, fess up to it now.
Yeah, like
right now. Just
get ahead of this. Right. Bet the Astros heavy. Are you sure I can't go tell Dusty Baker how to play the NLC? They prefer to do that at this point. Just to be blunt.
Don't put shirts or it. Just stick with Albert. One extra inning.
The message for Sean McDermott is call Dusty Baker. Tell him how to use a bullpen.
Yeah. Call Dusty.
Right. Caps, you're going to take 1,000 shots against the Penguins and none of them are going to go in. Figure something else out.
Okay, good.
27, right. No, I think that's the sentiment I need to express because I can't really Paul's on the right track with pick a linebacker, but I think it's got to be more than that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was thinking more specific things. Like the two that I was kind of going in with were more like, honestly, don't trade Darius. Like, I understand, like, the money was terrible. And obviously, like, there are some concerns about the locker room, but the run defense, like, Barnwell had a stat, I think he found, or someone had a stat, and it was basically the without Darius. Like, if you look at literally the snaps that Darius is on the field, the run game is consistently worse with him off of the field than it is with him on it. And again, he's not the only guy out there, but that's not a stat. And it's just like, is a 6-round pick really worth it? I don't know that that changes the whole season. It probably doesn't, but at least the run defense would have gotten better. And at least the defense up occasionally the last 2-3 weeks and maybe not put us into the situation where either Taylor or Peterman feels like they have to go out and score 40 points. I also seriously thought about the, like, go back in time and I would just, and just don't do the Sammy Watkins trade. Like, I mean, I get it. Like, EJ's been fine when he's been in there, but he hasn't been in there enough. And obviously Sammy's been out plenty, but at the same time, at least that gives Tyrod the confidence that A, you think they're going to go someplace this season, and B, when Sammy's out there, Tyrod like throwing to him. So, like, you know, whatever, just keep him in there. But I do kind of like your Frank kind of like more of a generalistic kind of like, you know, we can win this, you know, we can win this year, or, you know, we have a decent, you know, something like that. Because honestly, like, that is the most frustrating thing, because it seems like there is a consistent kind of like, trading space for time here that we're doing when it's kind of like, no, we really actually do have a chance this year. And it's just frustrating to see, like, there have been so many, this is that kind of whole Cubs line of argument. Like, yeah, the Cubs went like 100 years or whatever it was without a World Series, but it's like they were bad for 80 of those years.
Right.
It's the 20 years when they had a real shot. Those are the ones that hurt the most. This is one of the, like, in the last 17 years with the Bills, there have been 3 or 4 seasons when we had a real shot. And this might be one of those seasons, and it's going to be really fucking annoying if we lose this at the end of the season because we pissed it away because we started Peterman for a game, or we traded away Darius for a freaking sixth round pick when he's occasionally doing stuff in the run game. So that is that. Any final thoughts?
No, that's good. That was a good game.
Yeah. Okay. We'll come back to that one in the offseason or next year, because I feel like that we'll file that one away. If you have things that you would like to go back in time and tell, you know, the Pegulas or Brandon Bean or Sean McDermott, just let us know on Facebook or Twitter.
That's actually a good Twitter question. Maybe Paul should post that and be like, yes, this is the question we asked.
You have to, well, and you have 280 characters now, so you can do the whole thing. Yes. I will stall while Paul does that, unless he wants to do this day in Bills history first.
No, stall for now.
Stall. We'll just go ahead and do the, if you want to talk to us on Facebook, you can go to facebook.com/bbillsmny. If you want to talk to us on Twitter, you can go to, twitter.com/bbillsmny, or you can just follow us at bbillsmny, like a normal person.
That's how you explained it, like.
That's how I get to Twitter.
Right.
I'm not hip with the kids. If you're following us on Instagram, we're not there. So try one of the other ways. Also, we have our WordPress blog where we post the podcast is something, Frank.
bbillsmny@wordpress.com.
That's the one. And so we have, we always love hearing from listeners. And I say we, I mean the other two, because again, I don't really like the listeners. But other than that, I had a glass of wine tonight, Frank, instead of my normal beer. I didn't have any beers in the fridge, so I had a nice glass of wine, which was not terrible.
Well, la-di-da, sir.
Yeah, that's fancy. Yeah, so
what kind of wine was it? Because I haven't drank in like a month, period, because I just, whatever, I had a bad stomach bug a month ago, and I just haven't felt like going back to the well. But before that, I was drinking, you know, pretty much wine for a long time now, so I would like to know.
It was a fairly average Pinot Grigio that just happened to be un that happened to be uncorked and lying around in our fridge.
That's all we need, right?
Yeah, my wife and I have been doing a lot of wine. We had some wine Friday, but then Saturday she's like, I've read about this great recipe that's bourbon and apple cider with a little bit of ginger beer in it. And so we did that. That was our Saturday drink. It was a nice treat.
That sounds enjoyable. I enjoy a good ginger beer. Paul, do you want to do this day in Bill's history?
Yeah, I guess I could now. I've stalled long enough. So we're going to go way back in time to the year 2011. Now, I know you might not remember back that far because the Bills roster looks nothing like it does now. But let me set some context. The Bills had started the season 5-2. They were about to go on the road to a sunny destination. And they had, you know, they after losing two in a row here to go to 5-4, they proceeded to get their asses thoroughly handed to them by a score of 35-8 in a game in which they kicked two field goals, including a 50-plus yarder, and got a safety to get to 8 points. So this was a game against the Miami Dolphins. This was really that game. It was so similar to this game, which is why I picked it. You know, this was a chance to turn it around against a team in the Dolphins that going into this game was 2-7. This was not a strong Dolphins team. So people were not thinking they were going to be doing much of anything. It was Matt Moore starting a quarterback. This is the pre-Tannehill year, I believe, or Tannehill may have been injured. I would have to look into that. They had Daniel Thomas and Reggie Bush at running back for Miami. Didn't matter. This game was pretty much a blowout from the get-go. Miami scored very early with two touchdowns in the last 3.5 minutes of the first quarter to go 14-3. By halftime, they were up 28-6. In the third quarter with 10 minutes left, they blocked a punt that they were covered in the end zone to make it 35-6. The Bills safety capped off scoring to make it 35-8. I actually, because we had some time, well, I was the first one, I was actually ready for the podcast this time, so I had some minutes to kill before then. So I decided to go on to NFL.com and listen to some of the press conference tidbits after this game. So I literally had to stop and pause and jot some things down. So this was a quote from the Bills head coach, and let's see if this sounds like anything you could have heard yesterday. I wish I could give you an explanation of how we played effectively earlier in the season, and we're not playing effectively now. We lost this one as a team. Every phase had a problem. We're not very good right now. We're not executing the way we were early in the year. That was Chan Gailey. Could also be Sean McDermott. You don't really know.
Or Dick Duron.
I was going to say Ryan. Yes.
Yes. The Bills had been outscored during this streak 106-26 while losing three games in a row. That is, I don't even know what they've been outscored the last three games. Someone can do the math really quick, but it is shockingly similar.
It's a team record they were talking about this morning, but I will.
It was 37-30, and then the Jets score doesn't really count because we scored those two late touchdowns, but that was something on the order of
probably. Right, so the Bills have technically scored, yeah, the Bills have scored more than the 26 they've scored in this stretch of 2011, but still terrible. Quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick said the last 3 weeks have not been fun, obviously. We'll find out the character of the guys in the locker room in the upcoming games. Spoiler alert, they lost the next four as well before winning one more game during the season on Christmas Eve and finishing the season 6-10 after starting 5-2. 17 of the 38 Dolphins points were scored by Shane Graham, Reggie Bush, and Charles Clay, all current or former Bills. Clay had made a couple of really big plays. He had a touchdown pass. That's a quote. The Clay had a couple of really big plays quote was right out of Tony Sperano in his playbook. So, yes, this was not as gruesome as this past game, but when you look at the context of a team that went into the game 2-7, a Bills team that had started 5-2 and was now 5-4, going on the road to a team that was probably the easiest remaining team on their schedule, totally doing some pooch screwing and just getting blown out. This ended up being quite a sign for the rest of the year. Some interesting notes from the box score. 1, 2, 3, 4, 8 Bills caught passes in this game. None of them are currently in the NFL. One of them caught a pass yesterday for the CFL Saskatchewan Rough Riders, but otherwise none of these guys play in the NFL anymore. You know, rushing the ball, Ryan Fitzpatrick is the only one who had a rush who plays in the NFL. Fred Jackson, Johnny White, and CJ Spiller do not play. Tyler Thigpen does not play. Really, it was just, here's what I'm getting at with it, and this is where I'm going to get into the trivia question. So there is one Bills starter from this game who is, in fact, active in the NFL and is a member of the Los Angeles Chargers, but did not play yesterday. This Charger was tweeting back and forth with Sal Capaccio in advance of the game saying, and then during the game saying, boy, what a terrible decision the Bills had made on benching Tyrod. And then he thanked Sal for keeping up to date with his Bills news. Can you name this person who started in this game for the Bills, who was presumably watching this game as a member of the Chargers yesterday, even though he did not play?
Frank?
I think I know who it is.
I think I know who it is, too.
Well, would you like to go first, Scott?
Sean Merriman.
Sean Merriman's a good guess. Is it accurate, though, or not?
I'm going to say it was Booby Dixon.
Oh, Booby. Another good guess.
I know both of them did criticize the benching of Tyrod. We know that.
Yes, we do.
Also Richard, by the way, Richard Sherman should just watch a different game. Like, I don't need his opinion. Thank you.
Yeah. The correct answer, and those are both good guesses, actually is Chris Hairston. Remember him?
Oh, Chris Hairston.
Yeah, offensive lineman, started this game at the Bills. And where is he? Left tackle, I think. Right tackle? I got to look that up. Left tackle, like Deion Dawkins, who started this game. Chris has bounced around a bit since he left the Bills, but seems to have found a home in – actually, he hasn't bounced around. He went to San Diego, and now he's with Los Angeles, which is, of course, the same organization. He's only played two games this year and has been injured because of it. But, yep, he was the one, the former Bill that we follow on Twitter and was interacting with Sal, and was the starting left tackle for the Bills, getting blown out by the Dolphins on this date, November 20th, 2011.
I was going to say Hed Wyn, too. Famous Welsh poet.
Yes. Wyn. I think Frank and I were both caught off by the less out there answer. I had to take him into recovery. I'm like, oh, wait, that's an actual answer. I have to process this.
I know. I got it wrong, which shows you, you got to take a day off.
Yeah.
Bad things happen.
Just like Coach McDermott, every once in a while, Scott gets one wrong.
Exactly. It's just there was nothing else that could have changed what happened.
Going into that question, he was sure that it was Sean Merriman.
Exactly. It's just totally could not have seen that coming. I prepared like it was going to be, I was really sharp in practice last week, so I was pretty surprised by what happened. So if you were surprised about Sunday's game, you would probably be surprised to find out I don't know where this is going. This is a terrible the Kansas City Chiefs.
I was looking forward to it. I'm like, ooh, this is going to go somewhere amazing.
Nope. The Chiefs, as Frank mentioned earlier, the Chiefs went into the started off the season 5-0 and have since hit a skid. They are 1-5. They're 1-4. Excuse me, their last five games, including a horrific, unbelievable loss to the Giants on Sunday, where they lost 12-9. It's kind of difficult to talk about this game without knowing who's going to start at quarterback, because it's kind of like, if Peterman's starting, we're going to lose. So let's just pretend that Tyrod's starting, because if Peterman's starting, like, what's the point, right? I mean, like, if he wins, like, fantastic. Let's just let him start the rest of the season on some level. But I don't think either one of those things are going to happen. So let's just pretend that Tyrod starts. We're currently a 10-point dog. I'm not exactly clear whether Vegas has inside information or they're just kind of going off the fact that we're terrible no matter who's playing quarterback. But, Frank, why don't you start us with a thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, if there's one thing I've learned, it's that when you're down, nothing cures you like the Buffalo Bills. I think the line wouldn't even be informative at this point. Kansas City's lost 4 of 5, though. I mean, like,
yes. It's
not a team that, like, and somebody brought up today, like, what if the Chiefs benched Alex Smith for Pat Mahomes? Would Andy Reid get a bigger benefit of the doubt, and is that fair or right? I don't know. Because you could just say, hey, we're in a playoff spot, and we want to keep it that way, and we think that this quarterback might do a better job of it. I don't know. Would people look at him less?
Pretty wacky. That's what I would say.
It would be pretty wacky, but some people might look at it a little less skeptically. I don't know. Why would I ever pick the Bills again? at this point, I'm kind of I'm at the point where I want them to lose now, which is not nice and it's not fun. Not where I like to be as a fan, but I don't want them to win one and then, you know, fuck up the Dolphins game or, you know, or win one and blow the, like, and then go, you know, 1-5 or something and they beat the Chiefs. In a weird way, the Chiefs game, this would, the way they would screw up the Chiefs game is by winning and then not winning any other games or winning just enough, that would help them win just enough games to miss the playoffs and like really.
Hurt the rollover for Rosen, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, but more importantly, this defense does nothing. I didn't see anything that would make me think that they would do something now. So I'm just going to say the Chiefs are going to score some points. The Chiefs are now in a position where they're going to score some points because they've got the Buffalo Bills in town. And whether you want to say whether they lose 60-7 because Nathan Peterman starts and he turns the ball over a lot, or if you want to say they lose 35-14, I don't know. It's all the same to me. It doesn't matter because Tyrod Taylor's in there and he doesn't throw as interceptions. So, you know, we have to punt a lot more. It's all the same to me. They're both bad. I don't really regret. I'll just take this opportunity to say, like, I don't really have any faith in Tyrod Taylor. And so I doubly don't mind that, you know, we lost with, you know, because I don't think it really changed the result, which is the only thing that matters this time of year. So I'll pick the lesser of two awful scores. I'll say they lose 35-14 to the Chiefs.
Okay. Frank, just to be clear, you are tracking on the various stats about Tyrod on like third downs and stuff, right?
No. What's that say?
So, Bill Barnwell, so in 2017, the average yards to go for the Bills on third down is 8.26 yards, which is 30th in the league, but the third down conversion percentage rank is 9th in the league. In addition, Tyrod throws, since 2015, he throws for first downs 40.2% of the time on third down. The league average is 40.7%, and he also has 33 rushing first downs, which is third most in the NFL over that period.
Well, that's interesting to know, but how many touchdowns has he thrown, and how many yards has he thrown for, and I don't care.
So you're going to put it on two stats that have more things to do with everybody else on the team. And
doesn't, well, care. Whether Heather, okay, but what I'm saying for now is it almost doesn't matter. If what I'm saying is the offense with him doesn't play any better. So it plays less poorly.
I still think we're getting back to the point of like, we were 5-4 with him and we're 0-1 without him.
We were 5-2 with him and a lot of other people. And he in two games did nothing to about anything against, including one of those games against the Jets.
I will take the 9-game sample size over the 2 games.
I understand that the last 2 games are not the larger sample size, that they're probably overall the aberration, that he is not as bad as those 2 games. But I believe the Bills offense is as bad as those 2 games. I do. And that's with him in there. So what I'm saying is his presence doesn't make them better enough ever. And they probably will still lose by a lot.
Okay. All right, Paul.
All right.
Don't ask me predictions if you don't want to hear them.
Yep. I didn't want to hear them.
Shaking my fist at the screen.
Since we had an immediate, we did have an immediate response to our "if you could go back in time" Ooh. Question.
Yes. By all means.
But Ryan has not limited himself to one, so he's gone with 6. So we're meant to, 7. Excuse me. Some of which are, but to be fair, only 2 are Bills related, and 1 is more generically okay. Bills related. So, 1, fuck the police. 2, sign Woods. 3, Ooh. Impeach Trump. 4, Star Trek Discovery will be enjoyable. 5, don't trust the process. So there's one of them.
Okay.
Right. 6, John Bernthal is the best Punisher by far.
Yeah, 7,
don't invest in DC films. So. So yeah, I think sign Woods and, don't trust the process are the ones that McDermott should take out. I mean, he should take all of those things to whatever degree he wants. But you know, that's the one he really wants.
If you can short Warner Brothers, by all means, like go ahead. Yes. And the Weinstein Company, as long as you're at it.
So this is going to be a Chiefs blowout. I don't even need to go into too much detail here. I mean, what from the last 3 weeks indicates it won't be. I picked a blowout win for the Chargers, and they're not as good a team as the Chiefs, even though the Chiefs have been sucking lately. I like, you know what? 54-24 is a nice score. Let's go with it again. 54-24.
Wow.
Please, okay. Please grill Paul accordingly now that he was score out of whack with what you think is correct.
It's a podcast. I'm sorry. By all means, let's just stop. Frank's right, everybody. We'll see you next week.
I'm leaving my podcast and going home. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, no, okay. So, no, let's be – okay. The problem is I don't like the matchups in this game specifically because it's always about the matchups. No matter how we feel about the team in general, it's always about the matchups. And if you're playing a different team, I would feel different about this game. The problem is that the Chiefs are very good where the Bills are bad, which is they have a very fast running back and they have a very good tight end. And if we were playing a team that really relied on their wide receivers to score points, I would feel like we'd have a better shot. Now, and that's, of course, putting aside the fact that we haven't beaten the Chiefs in how long, and we just can't.
Yeah, it's been – I think they've beaten the Chiefs, and your audio went out, so I might be talking over you right now. But they beat the Chiefs, I want to say in the – it was they'd beaten them up in like 2011-ish, 2013-ish, somewhere around there. I'll figure it out.
Probably something like that. By the way, I'm just randomly looking at this ESPN box score of the last week's game, and it has like the Madden
2012,
ad.
By the way, sorry, 35-17 win.
The Madden ad comes up with like a thing that says like Bills fans, do you think you can do better? It's like an advertisement. And I'm kind of like imagining like you put Peterman into the game against the Chargers, and the announcer, like the automated announcer voice, is like, boy, it doesn't look like Peterman came to play today. I don't know why they put him in there. So it's a bad matchup for the Bills. I think that's why they lose. I do think they will score some points because the Chiefs have a decent defense, but I think the Bills will kind of come out of this rut a little bit, but I still think they lose. So I think they lose. I will say they'll cover. I'll say they score 17 and the Chiefs score 24. And we'll leave it at that. We already did our sign-off points. So does anyone else have anything to say before the podcast is over?
No.
Then the podcast is over. My name is Scott.
Over, please leave accordingly.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
I'm Paul.
I'm Frank.
Good night, everybody.